Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. I'm like four. Jitter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bolts and Bourbon. I'm Frank Gao, joined with my co-host, Matt Gunlock. Today we have Tyler Tharp from Synergy Training Group. Synergy provides practical pistol, carbine, less lethal, and first aid training. All their stuff is applicable to self-defense, offensive performance, competition shooting, and overall preservation of life. I ran into Tyler at the RPGI Shooting International match. If you remember, that match is hosted by Brendan Souter. He has been on the show 2 to 3 times talking about matchonomics and the day and night match that he runs up here in Shadowhawk, West Virginia. And we got to talking. He talked a little bit about his training company. He was working the match, so we chatted for quite a bit. It was also the last stage that I shot. And then we decided to have him on, talk about what his company does. But is there anything I missed, Tyler? Anything else that you'd like to cover in your introduction?
No, man, that was perfect.
Hey, so you're currently in Louisiana. Are you from there, and honestly, what do you like about living there?
Actually, I'm in central Mississippi. I grew That's up right. on the Mississippi River. Because Mississippi, you can't buy alcohol past like 10 o'clock or midnight, depending on where you are. So we just go across the bridge because Louisiana don't care about nothing. I've actually spent a ton of time in Louisiana, pretty familiar with the area, especially from I-20 down. Worked out of, what was the name of that town? Port Allen, next to Baton Rouge for some time. So I may not live there, but I've definitely spent a lot of time in Louisiana. But now I currently reside right smack in the middle of Mississippi. And believe it or not, about 8 miles from one of the top 5 most murderous cities in the nation. So, yay, go for us.
So, being down there in Mississippi, you ever get out to the swamps at all and go gator hunting or anything like that?
Man, so believe it or not, my mom, I think she held the record for largest gator killed by a woman about 10 years ago. So I've never had a chance to kill a gator, but I've been around it at best. We don't really have swamps here, believe it or not. Swampy land don't start until you get much further south. Around here, we got just, big, nasty rivers.
Only reason why I ask, I'm from Florida originally, Miami, Pembroke Pines area. And so like being down there, I grew up right next to the Everglades. So as a, 6-year-old kid, my dumbass was wandering the Everglades with me and my friends. And like we had this game we played where we just take our fishing poles and like we'd have a bobber on it and a decent enough weight, and we'd cast it out, see if we could hit a gator in the head. And then what we would try and do is try to get the gator to snag the line. Mm-hmm. And then we try and reel it in as close as we could. And I mean, after a while, he'll just like bring his head over to the side real quick and just snap the line and everything. Then we just put a new hook on and start all over again.
That's not unlike how you actually go hunting for gators. Mm-hmm. You snag them, pull them in. As soon as they get close to the boat, you stick a shotgun to their head.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I was like 8-9 years old at the time whenever we started doing a lot of that. So I didn't have a gun. I had a BB gun. We'd hit the gators with the BB guns.
That's were you brave? You were brave. Yeah.
I mean, they were out in the water. We weren't too worried about it. So what do you like about Mississippi?
My family, my mom, and my grandpa's here. I got some history here. That's and my wife's here. Her family's here. That's about it. The food's good. The food's really good. We have a river. I don't know if you ever heard of the Mississippi River. So that's cool. Lots of good fishing.
Spans many states.
Yeah. It's I love going places, different states and crossing their rivers. And I'm like, yeah, that's a creek. that's not a river. But no, it's the state's it lacks a lot of things, but the cost of living is really low, and you know what little bit I have is here, so it's home.
No, that's awesome. I mean, being from Florida, I don't ever want to go back over there. I just have no desire. Like, it's too hot for me. I spent my whole career in the desert, but you know, you go down to Florida, you're close to the equator, you got humidity. It's freaking miserable. The only thing that. The only thing that brings me back every now and again is family. Other than that, you know, it's 50 degrees. If you know, it's been between the 30s and the 50s today here in Virginia. I love that. I'm a cold weather person. I'm the exact opposite.
I want to be in shorts and t-shirt year round. Give me 80 plus year round. I can go boating. I can, you know, do all the fun things on the river and in the, you know, reservoirs and things like that. I'm a summertime kind of guy.
You say that, but when I saw you in Florida, it was fucking cold that day.
It was. That's why I had a lot of clothes on and I hated it.
See, I wore shorts that day because I was like, it's Florida. And that turned out to be like the worst decision.
Right. Yimin told me about that, like how you went out there in shorts, didn't have any cold weather gear. And like, get this man some clothes. He's going to freeze to death.
I survived.
Yeah. You know, 40 degree weather to me is still shorts weather, shorts and t-shirt weather.
It wasn't the 40 degrees. It was that we were all just drenched. It just did not stop raining.
The sun wasn't out ever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I get that.
It was rough. Yeah. No, look, if the sun ain't out and it's 60, I still got a jacket and pants on. I get cold real easy.
It's because you're so damn set far south.
That's it, man. Thin blooded. Oh, yep.
I mean, I'm the opposite of you when I'm in the heat. Like, I feel the heat. Like, I've been a heat case a couple times in my career, and it just, you know, it's not the same for me anymore. You know,
that tracks, man. People with any sort of heat injury or even like super cold injury, they seem to be susceptible to them later in life.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do fare well pretty well. But yeah, give me the cold, and I'm doing more stuff outside, specifically hunting and stuff like that. Come September,
that
October,
is the best
November.
Part of winter.
Yeah,
hunting. Everyone's like, man, you can always put on more clothes. I was like, yeah, but I don't want to. I really don't want to, man. I don't like wearing earmuffs. I don't like wearing gloves. So, like, as soon as my nose and my ears and my hands get cold, I'm just irritated all the way around.
Mm-hmm. So, you, I got to ask, I mean, this is kind of covering what we're talking about. How did you first get into training, and at what point did you create Synergy Training Group?
So, I first started, all right. So, quick backstory, my dad died in the line of duty in 2009. And so my mom and my outlet for that, we just found ourselves in competitive shooting, USPSA Steel Challenge. Drew way more to Steel Challenge, USPSA kind of left Steel Challenge in the back because it's kind of boring for us, because we're just really high strung, hyper people. That's, you know, not to say Steel Challenge is a boring thing. It was just, we're hyper. My mom found herself becoming someone important very quickly. She was even our state coordinator for USPSA for some time. Well, during that journey, she met a guy named Rodney May back in 2011 or 12. I can't remember. Rodney May is OG GM, Team SIG. Used to shoot and teamed up with Max Michelle way back in the day, back when SIG only had a 226 for competition shooting, at least. That was the closest thing to a comp gun they had. So anyway, naturally, being around him, he was an instructor. He was the range master, lead instructor at Mid-South Shooting Institute for a long time. And then K&M in Florida, when it turned into CORE, that was because of Rodney. And now it's Altus. And then he went to Element, which is where I met Brendan. But anyway, long story short, I got into it all with him. He's got his own personal range in Vicksburg, which is where I teach at sometimes as well. Vicksburg, Mississippi, that town right on the river where I grew up. And took care of all the classes he had to give, which is more combatives, offensive style training, that type of thing, offensive and performance training. Helped him build shoot houses and teach different groups and whatnot, alphabet soup type of things, and started trying to figure out where I sort of fit in this world. Because I got fairly good in the past 5 years. I say fairly good for a dude that never gets to practice and shoots five matches a year because I enjoy teaching more than anything else. Took some different classes from guys like Frank Proctor, Raleigh Bowman, Tim Heron, Ed Monk, that did the ASP instructor curriculum thing, got my USCCA cert, and we all know that that's just not really worth anything, but that's what the state has to have for us to do permit classes 7-8 years ago, whatever it is. But that's how I got into it. Believe it or not, the reason why I got into it is because I love teaching. I was a math tutor at the age of 14.
Oh, wow.
And I was, then I did saxophone tutoring not long after that. So I've always been really good at teaching, kind of a God-given gift type of thing. And it just transitioned into the gun world because of all of that.
So what's really interesting about that is one thing I've noticed is people that usually come from a musical background translate into firearms pretty well. And it comes down to, you know, their ability, the repetitions and putting in the work and just the practice and having that discipline to do that. Mm-hmm. And then being able to break things down to the lowest denominator.
Chunking.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, trying to nitpicking each little segment out that's important, isolating it, figuring out how to practice with the most efficiency, and then, of course, teaching that in a palatable way. And not just a palatable way, but a way that also motivates the end user to also do it. Because they have to enjoy it. They have to like it. Or else you can beat someone over the head all day long with a great product. If they don't enjoy it, they ain't gonna eat it. So 100%. I really enjoyed music. I was in jazz band. That was the most fun of the things I did. Got to play for some pretty cool people in events and whatnot. And then of course, like I said, I was a math nerd, but yeah, all that, like you said, all that isolating and breaking things down into the smallest portions and being able to efficiently practice it and convey it is exactly what we're doing here. All too often do I see instructors out there teaching what they think is just a good curriculum of repetitious things and not really understanding the smaller components of it that are missing the attention that they really need.
So you just to kind of break off real quick, you mentioned jazz, and I used to listen to a lot of jazz, still like a lot of jazz. Who's your favorite jazz artist? And I know there's many greats out there. And I'll go first. Yeah. Like Dizzy Gillespie is probably one of mine. And then comes Tito Puente.
What the jazz I played wasn't, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't like true to jazz form. It was more jazz, blues, rock.
Yep.
More entertainment style because that's what we were doing. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy covering Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yep.
I believe it or not, my most favorite song to play to cover was Smooth by Santana.
Okay.
And let's face it, that's really not all that jazzy.
No.
But it kind of fell within the parameters of what we were trying to do. And man, if that wasn't one of the most fun songs to play,
mm-hmm.
So I don't really have a favorite as it is true to jazz. I kind of enjoy more of the spectrum of like BB King, Stevie Ray Vaughan,
Joe Bonamassa.
Dude, I even stretched the lines a little bit even to go to Eric Clapton. So
honestly, yeah, I would say he is a blues guitarist.
Yeah, and honestly, you can muddy the waters between blues and jazz. You really can.
And rock. Like, you know,
it's all branches of the same tree.
It started with jazz, swing, jazz, you know, you had bebop and stuff like that, and then you went into blues, and then in the 60s,
yep.
you know, blues evolved into rock.
We know where the blues came from.
Hmm.
Mississippi Delta.
Yep.
I grew up in Redwood, Mississippi, which is the very bottom of the Delta, which is where the Delta starts, where the Yazoo River and the Mississippi River split and meet.
We could go down a big rabbit hole because I kind of learned the history of the jazz based on, you know, different areas of the country, you know, starting with slavery, you know, even your Afro-Cuban jazz, you know, Bata, that started down there in Cuba. And, you know, it started, you know, and even if you go to the origins of it all, it started down in out over in Africa, you know, with a lot of, yeah, it's really interesting with all the beats and everything. Like, Afro-Cuban jazz has a very distinctive beat.
I'm going to, we're going to have to talk more on this, because it's not often that I come across someone in the firearms industry that knows way more about jazz than I do. And I was like, I played it. How do I not know all this?
I used to play it.
Well, they taught us how to play certain songs to fit within mm-hmm. the parameters of the goal of the band.
Yeah.
Music history was never really a thing, unfortunately, not for us at least.
I had a music teacher, so I did a lot of jazz band too and stuff like that. And I mean, shoot, behind me I have my sax, which was my grandmother's, and she got it from her brother, and it was a Boucher saxophone from 1913.
What?
Yeah.
That's too freaking cool, man. Is it a alto, I assume?
Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha. Yep.
So I had a great music teacher who more or less talked about the history of it as well.
Yeah, so I had a great jazz director, but he left like in year two. And so we just kind of fell by the wayside, honestly. So I didn't get to love it as much as I really wanted to. Like, I really craved more, but I didn't have a leader there that could, you know, lead in that direction. I didn't play the alto much. I started on the alto, but once I got into the third total year of playing music, I learned quickly that I could play all of the saxophones really well. Mm-hmm. And no one really wanted to play the tenor or the barry. And I enjoyed both. I actually kind of enjoyed the tenor and the barry more than the alto. So I got stuck bouncing between tenor and barry for just about everything for the next 3 years.
Yeah, one of my good friends, he did the contrabass clarinet, and then he also played with the contrabass sax. Is that what it's called? I can't remember at this point. Like the big
they
boy.
Just call it the bass saxophone.
Yeah, it's the bass saxophone.
It's bigger than the berry, and it's like
it goes down to the
hard
ground.
Use.
Yeah. But I mean, this show isn't about music, but even though, you know,
poor Frank's like, what in the world are y'all talking
dude,
about?
I'm a typical Chinese immigrant. They try to force me to play piano and I just want to go outside and, you know, play baseball. So
my wife plays piano, as you can see it right. Yeah. Which shoulder am I? Okay. That one.
I mean, I have two guitars in my room. I have, and like, I'm a huge rock guy. I have a Dave Mustaine Signature Series guitar, and then I have an ESP Explorer that I put, what's his name? Zach Wild humbuckers in. So
I got guitarist friends. One of them was actually the guitarist for Mutiny Within.
Okay.
But I don't know anything about a guitar. I know they got some strings and they make noise. That's all.
Yeah. I suck at this point. I ain't played in like 10 years. So it's like, yeah, it's good decoration.
If you look hard enough, you'll see right there-ish one of my old band awards.
Okay. Heck yeah. So kind of getting back on track, you know, music aside and everything, how has your approach to training and training others evolved since you first started your business? And what outlets do you and your team attend to freshen up and progress your curriculum?
It's been a total 180. So I created Synergy Shooting Solutions back in 2018 after just, you know, helping out my local city on the range, do some one day, you know, tune-up classes, very technique based, like helping them with the general manipulations, fundamentals, things of that nature. And then 2018, I did the Synergy Shooting Solutions, started teaching enhanced carry classes, started taking my own training a little more serious, like getting out of the box that I was put in under what I've learned. Not to say it's bad. It's just, you know, I learned quickly that I didn't know as much as I thought I did, you know. Mountain of Peak Stupid happened to me about just before COVID, really. And I changed directions in 20, believe it or not, I totally changed directions a year ago last month. Because I finally had not a revelation, but just like a total mindset change, like an understanding of who I am and what type of training I want to deliver. I finally figured out who I am. So it took me over a decade to figure out who I am and where I fit in this world, but I got there, you know, slow and steady, right? So I went from just teaching people how to shoot to a little bit more than that. And believe it or not, my training has evolved more into principles and concepts rather than techniques and hard you know, hard driven little tiny skills of like move the thing this specific way to whatever, you know. I've really learned that this is way more individual and subjective than I ever thought it could have been. Because the more I learn, the more I realize, man, I kind of suck at shooting. Like I thought I was good. And then I started meeting people that are really good. And y'all know as well as I do, USPSA, the goals post for USPSA have been moved like crazy in the past 5-6 years. Christian Seiler came out of basically nowhere and showed everyone that they suck at shooting. Mm-hmm. at least for pistols, right? We're just, you know, specifically talking about pistols. I've done a bunch of carbine stuff as well, two gun competitions, intermediate range of fast, close and personal type of stuff. But I'll say this, my training has flipped from hard techniques and just helping with the fundamentals, which I do that. I do private lessons. I do help people that, which it's flipped to what I would consider just a heavy principle and concepts driven class, helping people understand who they are, what type of shooter they are, catering their practices to that, understanding how to mold their mindsets and their mental game into their practice and their execution and performance, things of that nature as well. And I also do less lethal training. I do classes for women and teens that can't carry a gun or don't want to carry a gun. They still deserve the right to self-defense. They just, you know, don't want to carry a gun. That's cool, man. That's their freedom. So I do a OC spray class, intro to self-defense and awareness class all bundled into one. I've gotten into active shooter training, did the active shooter instructor through Ed Monk. You know, I've done the deliberate coaching with Brian Hill last year, actually AI'd for him a couple weekends ago, finally got my Black Ant patch. So yeah, just trying to do more things, more training that helps people really understand who they are, being okay with that person and developing their own journey and being successful in that journey.
So kind of going along with that, what is your most popular class? What class do you typically recommend for people to go with whenever they want to come train? And has anything you're working on introducing in terms of new material, is there anything that you're currently looking to introduce as far as new material goes?
So I just came out with my flagship class last year. I went up and did a private class for a firearms training company up in Washington State. And they were kind of my guinea pigs on what I am calling, or what is, functional pistol. I'm going to create a functional carbine as well. I just need to sit down and put some time behind it. But pistol training is just kind of where the money is right now. So I catered, you know, it made economic sense to do that first. So I believe in a holistic approach to things, especially modern medicine. I'm not a big fan of, no offense to anybody listening out there, I'm not a fan of modern medicine, pills being shoved down our throats and all that thing. I feel like there's a much better, more functional approach to things. My wife is actually a health coach and she has the same ideals as well. It's like, that's her same practices and all that. So I was like, man, we believe in functional medicine and the approach of individual solutions for their specific problems. That would be perfect if I applied that concept to training. And I did. So functional pistol was born and I've tested it. I've ironed out some things. I went to I taught at the Active Self-Protection National Conference last year as well. And I taught two four-hour classes called Beyond the Draw. One was a dry fire version of it. So like how to practice in dry fire. And then one was a live fire version. And I got them to explore how fast their visual speed is, understanding what that is, even is, got them to explore what they're feeling in their hands, rebuilding that mind to muscle connection with all the applicable muscle engagements that is required for pistol shooting, because I fully believe in good engagement, but not tension. Everybody's like, oh man, tension's bad for speed. Yes, it is, but we still need to be engaged and we need to know the difference. So teaching people how to be engaged with their muscles healthily, properly. I don't know if healthily is a word, but whatever. I'm a math guy, not a word guy. So with all of that, I've created functional pistol. And again, like I said, I'm going to create functional rifle at some point. And it's just going to be carbine, like 300 in applicable, practical shooting with a carbine. That's what I've ironed out. That's what I would recommend anyone that is a defensive minded citizen anyone that is a cop, SWAT cop, some sort of alphabet soup agent, meal guy, USPSA only shooter, IDPA shooter, steel challenge shooter, I don't care. If you enjoy shooting a pistol and you want to be better, functional pistol is where you're going to learn the nuts and the bolts of it and how to cater a good practice and a good journey to your specific style of shooting. Now, of course, there are wrong shooting techniques. We're going to go over those things. Like, there's things that are objectively wrong, and I'm not going to let you go down bad paths. I'm basically going to lay out all the bad habits I've created over the past 10 years that I wish I wouldn't have, and I'm going to explain why they are bad so they don't have to make those same mistakes. And then, show the good paths.
I kind of find that the instructors that struggled a little bit more going, you know, through their journey tend to be better instructors. And that's because they've had to break the bad habits. They know what the bad habits are. They know how to break things down and explain how to fix those bad habits.
Mm-hmm. I was never told 10 years ago to put any sort of focus into my visual acuity. And I was given too big of a target. I was never told that deltas are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I may have been told that, but it wasn't with enough, enough whatever. Like, it wasn't serious enough to me. I didn't hold my vision to a high enough standard. I've gotten visually sloppy. Now, what that gave me is an absurd amount of speed. I'm talking draw to first shots in the 0.5s. I'm talking transitions that are faster than most people's splits. But unless you're just throwing the video on Instagram and not showing the hits, it ain't worth nothing. I've learned the hard way that all that just crushingly raw speed has been a kind of a detriment to me, because now I'm having to forcibly dial myself back and put a whole lot more focus on what I'm seeing and what the gun is telling me than just letting it rip. And as someone that's a hyper person that just loves going fast, man, that is brutally difficult. I wish I would have been held to that higher visual standard 10 years ago. But that's just one example of what you'll hear in this class.
Is that something you find yourself slipping on from time to time? Like, maybe, you know, going into a state, you're like, have visual 100%. Patience, don't be a dipshit. And then all of a sudden you're like, I started blasting, that kind of mentality.
Yep. Yeah. If you go to my Instagram, you'll see like two posts back, you'll see me run into a position where there's it's a triple stack, but the one in the middle is flipped over for a no shoot. So I went back and looked at the commander. The slowest split was the transition from the bottom target to the top, and it was a 17.
Damn.
Believe it or not, they were still all alpha. I don't know how, but it's just totally, maybe because they're only, you know, 2 yards away. Mm-hmm. But yes, sometimes I do go into full ignoramus mode and run the gun so fast that everybody at the range knows that I'm the one shooting at that moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting how you can absolutely tell idiosyncrasies in shooters, especially from how fast they're running the gun. Go ahead.
On the flip side of that, though, sometimes I'll way overthink it and slow myself down to the point where I'm inefficient.
Right.
And you can see that on certain stages as well. Like, so it's, and we talk about, I go through all the mental management stuff, like how do we train the subconscious mind and self-image to be in control and take the conscious mind and not let it override. And I'll even like, I can even manipulate people into tricking them into both of those, the conscious and the subconscious mind, and show them the timer and the score, the hits on paper, and show them, hey, the subconscious mind is a way better shooter than you give it credit for. Sometimes my conscious mind is that typical little ADHD 8-year-old kid that wants to run amok and just destroy things. And if I don't give it a little coloring book and tell it to go behave and just look at the coloring book and give him something productive to do, it runs amok and does bad things.
Absolutely. You mentioned mental management. Have you taken a Steve Anderson class?
I have. Yep. Believe it or not, I set the record for the 1R1. Okay. It was like a 1-3-something. I don't remember.
Yeah. And is he someone you still talk to from time to time?
On a personal level, no. I'd like to. Seems like a cool dude and all that, but I only got a chance to hang out with him that weekend and take that class.
Yeah, it's interesting because you guys went off on the tangent about music. Steve Anderson, if you know his background, he was like a heavy metal hair band. Like that was like he was raised super evangelical, super Christian. And to kind of get away from that, he got into, I guess you call it the devil's music, right? And he became funny. And he did an episode with Brian Connolly from Under's HD Gold, who we've had on before.
Yep.
And he talks about just how hyper focused he was and how the same thing you guys are talking about, being able to break down technique into the requisite parts and like figure things out from different angles. And he credits that because he's really known as the first guy who did nothing but dry fire and then made GM just based off of them. So,
He and Ben Steger.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Two very different personalities, but very good models to go off of.
I think Steger's still the only dude to ever make GM on his first ever classifier.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and he was shooting like a Beretta 92.
Beretta 92, was.
So,
yep. Which, you know, 15 years ago, that GM was very different than it is now.
Yes.
Very different.
Yeah, I agree.
But no, so Steve Anderson, dude, I really enjoy that. Before I even knew who Steve Anderson was, but it wasn't long before, I read With Winning in Mind by Lanny Basham, which is the the original umbrella, if you will, creator of the Mental Management Solutions. And you can look that up on internet. Anybody's listening, the book With Winning in Mind is a great place to start. I teach a class called it's not even a class. It's actually one-on-one training. It's called Synergy Remote. It's a minimum 6-week coaching program, one-on-one where you send in videos. We have Zoom meetings. You get specific dry fire and live fire homework and assignments. And if the student and their journey requires it, which most of them do, I'm going to tell them to order up the With Winning in Mind book and read it from cover to cover. You also get a performance journal. It's Synergy Training Group branded little journal, and you get a little outline of what to log in it and how to phrase it so that we are catering to the subconscious and the self image.
Yep.
Like, people are way too hard on themselves, man.
Yeah, like, that was me.
And yeah, think about it. In your head, if someone spoke to you like you speak to yourself, you'd probably punch them in the mouth.
Yeah.
So why do we do it? I mean, I ain't no different. I do it. So, like, why do we do it? Why are we so hard and negative on ourselves, man? It's terrible.
Yeah, it works sometimes, but I would say in the long run, it also wears you down and it leads to you getting burnt out. So, yeah, I like to think in all of us, there's probably like, you know, the whole angel and devil on our shoulders. There's one that sounds like Ben Steger. There's one that sounds like Steve Anderson. So at any given moment, you're going to get feedback from either one of those individuals. Don't mean to put you on the spot, but you're the third person we've had on that's had like one good eye and had to deal with that in terms of like firearms and training and just shooting competitions. So we've had on Mike Pannone, who lost one eye to a breaching charge. And we also had James Gill on, and we talked a little bit about him before we started this podcast. But when we're talking to Mike, you know, he was still able to understand concepts like dot occlusion, target focus. How have you adapted your vision to competition shooting, just shooting in general?
So a little bit different. Yes, we only have one usable eye, but I was born this way. Like, I don't know any different. These two guys, man, they live most of their life with two eyes. And then in literally the blink of an eye, only have one. So I can't imagine what type of transition and adaptation that requires. So I don't want to speak on their behalf because their circumstances is significantly different from mine. I've never really had an issue with it, man, other than limited job opportunities. You know, I had to, getting in allowed into the army was a task. It was, that was something, but outside of that, man, it's really just been a job limiter for me. As far as shooting goes, I just simply put the dot in front of my left eye. I don't turn my head. If you notice, Mike Pannone turns his head a lot, or I say a lot, he turns it all the time, but he has that quote unquote muscle memory, which we all know are neural pathways that have been myelinated and protected. So his presentation has been the same way every time. He just has to turn his head at the same time to get his eye behind the gun. For my cross dominant people out there that haven't had to make a hard change basically overnight like these guys have, don't force your head around like that. That only works in specific situations, and because it has to. The better way is just to simply present the sights in front of your dominant eye. For me, I can't do dot occlusion, period. I have to see through an optic, which greatly limits what optics I can use. Believe it or not, it was the reason why I shot irons for the longest time, because the RMR or the SROs didn't exist. The 507 comps didn't exist. The only thing that really existed that had a thin housing was the RTS2 that we put on open guns. And you sure as heck wasn't putting that on a slide ride because it's so huge. It's just that ain't a thing. But there was no thin housing big wind until the – was the SRO the first one?
I believe so.
The SRO, maybe the SIG Romeo, but that thing was a bust, honestly. It is a crapshoot if you got a good one or not. And then they got the Romeo 1 Pro with a shield that makes it more durable. The DPP wasn't all that durable, and it had such a huge deck height that it was just kind of odd, honestly. And for someone that has to look through a tube, you can imagine how specific that has to be without it, or so that it doesn't take away too much attention or just block too much information. So I need, like I said, I need a big window with thin housing, which again kind of leads to a durability issue. Cause I mean, how many thin housing, big window optics do you know that are super durable, being beat up and can bounce back?
Yeah, no, not many. Are enclosed emitters a no-go for you?
So, yes. With the exception, the only one I found that, doesn't mess with me too much is the Holosun EPS, and I have that on my Glock 48, believe it or not. The 509T is okay, but it has just a little bit thicker housing. But yeah, the Holosun EPS works out for me. And then of course it's just got the single dot reticle, the 6mm away. I don't like all the extra nonsense that Holosun does because it takes away too much attention. I end up getting dot focused really easy.
Yeah, it's nice. The options are nice. I think for shooters that don't have an index built in and need some help hunting the dot, there's also the ACSS reticle, which Ben Stager's been ripping on.
Vulcan, I hate it.
Yeah, but
that's the worst thing ever, because during your presentation, you see a flash of red and you're like, oh, that's it. And then you're like, wait, no, it's not. That's the stupid circle thing. Where's the actual aiming thing yet? Oh, there it is.
Right.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah. We'll call it what it is. It's training wheels. It's for people that are getting used to the dot, but eventually you need to take the wheels off, and you know, the other dots are simpler and they're better, they're quicker. So you and I met when you're volunteering at the RPGI Shooting International match. I was in Florida.
Yeah.
How you mentioned you know, training at Element, meeting Brendan. When was the first time you met him, and how has that relationship evolved?
I don't know when I met him, but I do know it was at Element because Rodney, my mom's husband, was teaching there and sometimes living there as well, because he was a range master for some time and all that. It's went through some owner changes and all that, so we're not really down there anymore. But I do remember shooting. Oh, you know what? I remember exactly how I met Brendan. So this is funny, actually. there's a picture of it somewhere. So me and my Mississippi buddies, Kyle Rogers, Dustin Bops, Graham Newell, and who am I missing? Stony Steele. We all decide to do a doubleheader. We go to the night match on a Friday night. Friday night lights out, or whatever it was called back in the day. This was like 2019, I want to say, or maybe 18. I can't remember. And we shot the night match that night in like cleaned house. Oh, Jeff was there. That's who it was. The guitarist for Mutiny Within.
Okay.
He is an insanely good shooter. Like, he was third in the nation in cowboy action. He's been the state champion for ever, it seems.
Yeah.
But anyway, he won heavy because he was shooting an AK. And then Dustin won pistol. I want to say Kyle won something, and I came in like third or something like that. And nobody knew us. Nobody there knew who the heck we were. And they're like, who are these random rednecks that come out of nowhere and just start winning all the stuff? So I met Brendan at that event, and we just kind of kept in touch. That next morning, we actually got like 3 hours of sleep and went to Altus the next morning and shot the two-gun finale. Poor Jeff, his AK barrel decided to loosen up on him. So he was shooting at 300 yards, and you would see the impact like 20 feet off somewhere else. You know, it's a 30 cal impact, so you're gonna see it.
Yeah.
That poor guy. But yeah, that's how I met. We kind of stayed in touch, and I've shot some matches with him. I volunteer as much as I can because I really enjoy working sport. Believe it or not, I can count on one hand the number of matches I've been able to shoot and not RO. So for some reason, I just enjoy being a steward of the sport way more than I do actually competing, because I'm not a competitive person, believe it or not. Competition for me is just a way of proofing my practice and skills and keeping the edge sharp, if you will. But yeah, that was back in 2019, I think. I don't remember when it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because you were ROing that stage with Kyle Rogers. Mm-hmm. And we all, because Kyle had been up to Shadowhawk during his the day and night match that Brendan mm-hmm. likes to run up here. But, you know, we've talked to Brendan a lot about him running matches, and he runs a lot of them. Like, that man is a madman in terms of just churning out he quality is a monster. Matches. Seeing as you've worked as many matches as you have, what are some things that Brendan does terms of communication, organization, that mm-hmm. makes the decision to like go and work a match for him easy for you?
Oh man. So first off, there's no drama. That is so nice that I can come down there. He's usually got a place for me to crash. I can talk to him like he's just one of the guys, because he is, you know, he doesn't have that ego about him. He is a servant of the sport. And as someone that also tries to be as much, I mean, I even have the word servium tattooed on the back of my tricep, and it's to serve. It's nice to be in that same company. It really is. I wish I lived closer, because his matches are awesome. He makes it easy. He makes sure that we have everything we need. Communication is always there. And he's really good at delegating too. You know, he knows when he was a chief warrant officer. Yep. He knows that one man can't do it all. So he really understands the people he's got, I wouldn't say people that's under him, because he probably doesn't even view it that way. He's just the people I'm leading. He understands who's good at what, and he is really good at delegating appropriately. Hell, I don't know anybody that doesn't enjoy working a match for him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we're super grateful that you guys work in that match too, because Sam Nelson and I, we drove all the way down from Virginia to get to that mm-hmm. match, and it was an awesome experience. And, you know, part of what drew us down there was that we had been to Brendan's matches up here in West Virginia, and he's always asking us, like, when you guys come down in the Panhandle. It's like, we got to go to one, and we picked a really good one to go to. Stages were great. Staff was great. All around, really cool experience, except for the weather.
Well, you know, it's Florida. I'm so glad you got to come down to a match at his place and not somewhere else that he was having to deal with, because that always poses a problem. Right. If you're not fully in charge of the range and the grounds and like where things are, it's a challenge, because you're having to tiptoe, walk on eggshells, if you will, to not, you know, irritate the rest of the people at the range. And you know, because almost never are you going to go to a level one match where, which this was a level two, but I've even been to level two matches on ranges that are big enough to where the regular people are still there shooting and enjoying it.
Right.
And, you know, to them, competition shooters are just kind of in the way. Right. We're taking up a bunch of bays. We're shooting a bunch. we're being kind of loud and busy, and we're kind of in the way. So it was really nice to have for y'all to be down there on a match that he had 100% control over. And then we had a great REM, Drew, and then of course the head of NRI was there. I swear his name is like under fire, it seems like, all the time. It but is. I love taking a picture with him because I think I'm the only one that can make him smile on camera.
It's a good try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He and my mom are friends from way back.
Okay. So it's funny that you mentioned having control of the range, because every time he comes up to West Virginia, and it's no fault of Shadowhawks, Lynn and Randy run a fantastic range. It's just that he's always running a night vision match, and we always go late, and people always complain about the noise. One of the first times we did it, the cops were driving in as we're all leaving the range just because it's a noise complaint. Mm-hmm.
I remember this story.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't there for much of it because I was just like, no, I don't really want to sit around and talk to some cops. So I'm just going to hit the road. The last time we had to cut like one stage short, just because, you know, the rifles were making too much noise. So it's just unfortunate. I mean, people aren't used to hearing gunshots. If you're living in this Indian right. range, you're used to hearing it. You're just not used to hearing it at like 1 a.m, which I understand. But that range is awesome. Clearly, like, all his years of expertise and understanding what he wants out of a range has gone into making that place. I want to talk a little bit about some of your partners. And, mm-hmm. you know, I ran into you down there.
Yep.
You handed me your business card. And I was like, I've seen this logo before. Where have I seen it? And it's on Dry Fire King. Like, you're a sponsor for Dry Fire King. So that's... like the bulk of my dry fire is done on that program, put mm-hmm. it up on the TV, and it provides me variety, moving targets, like all other kinds of scenarios. So how did you end up becoming a sponsor? And then how are you in particular using that program for your dry fire?
I wish I could give credit to whoever it was that introduced me to Dry Fire King. I feel like it was dang near a year ago, back when he only had like 5 videos out. I kept using them, and I got on the mailing list, and eventually I saw where on the paid portion, the Patreon, on the very bottom of it said, for business promotional, tier. And I was like, ooh, this is a no brainer. For this many dollars a month, I can have my brand recognition. Like, heck yeah, man. And not only that, but it's such a convenient and practical training tool. I don't care if you don't shoot USPSA or not, being put under performance on something with actual targets that's different each time, it's so practical and usable. And I can even break it down into your practice of each one of your practices for a newer person on their journey really needs to be segmented in a just speed mode. Like, you know, each one of the videos are 10 to 12 minutes long. So dedicate each dry fire session, which needs to have a sleep in between. All right. Mm-hmm. You can have 2 dry fire sessions before sleep, but they need to be the same type. So you need to either stay in speed mode or stay in accuracy mode, stay in performance mode, or stay in movement mode until you get to your level. All right. People like us, we can kind of intermingle all of it and just have a focus on one thing that we want to work on. But for the newer journey, I can tell you, hey, man, go watch the whatever video you want, or I'll pick one specifically for them. I want you to shoot dry fire this in speed mode this day, accuracy mode this day, performance mode this day. And of course, we go over what all that really means, so they understand what that means. But it's an easy training tool. Man, it's like it's a no-brainer. It takes a good bit of workload off of me. I don't have to figure out what drill to go tell them to do. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, today you're gonna do the L prez because of this, and this, or whatever. I'm like, just go shoot the dry fire, dry fire king. This is so easy. Of course, in the little onboarding packet, you get a barrel block as well. Mm-hmm. So don't, you know, they have a safe way of doing it, because shooting your TV would kind of suck. Yep.
If you're gonna if you're gonna do it, make sure it's an alpha. But yeah, don't shoot your TV.
Right. Make sure it's an alpha. Well, when the TV, you know, is no longer working, like, yep, that was an alpha.
Yeah. I called it. I called it right before the screen disappeared. Called it.
I mean, at least get a video of it.
So, fun fact. I'm this office that I'm sitting in right now is my home office, and my buddy was dry firing his new CZ75 compact. So it was the PO1 at my door right here, and he shoots my dang light socket right there.
Oh, jeez.
And I don't know why I never noticed this before, but like, you could scale up a light socket to be an A-zone. Like, it's almost the exact same proportions.
Yeah.
So he definitely got an A-zone on that one. His freaking muzzle was 2 feet off of my right ear, and I look at him, I was like, you know that was loaded, right? He's like, no, I really didn't. Crap, I'm so sorry. Oh my god, it was that was interesting to say the least. But yeah, man. called an A-zone.
Oh, it's too funny. But yeah, I love that program. So it's basically like, it helps me practice match prep, you know, like going up to the line, having to perform each rep. But what I also like is, you know, there's so much variety in the target presentations. I will incorporate like extra targets through gaps in the door, like kind of a port off to the side. And recently my thing has just been make it really fucking hard. Like sometimes I'll fire a build drone every single target and it's damn near impossible. But
jeez,
like you'll get to the point where your firing hand is really tensing up. Like you're going till the wheels fall off. I'll throw in unloaded starts. Sometimes I'll shoot all of them like strong hand or weak hand, and then I'll switch to the other hand. Like if at a certain point, like some of the par times are a little lenient. So you just start seeing what you can get away with based on what's going to show up at the match that you're about to show up at. And there's over 30 videos, and there's also some other dedicated videos out there to do. He's starting to do rifle dry fire.
I was just
videos.
About to say that. Yeah.
Like it's, and you pay $4 a month. Like that,
yeah,
it's a,
I mean,
for a basic patron package.
And it's addictive. Like, I'm going to straight up tell new people, man, like I tell them all the time, your dry fire practice should be, it should never be longer than 15 minutes. 10 minutes is ideal. And if you could do 5 to 7 minutes twice a day, that's even better. But I'm going to tell you, I find myself dry firing for 30 plus minutes.
Yeah.
Because these videos are just so much fun. They're so engaging and it's so palatable.
Yeah.
So yeah, at the end, my veins are popping out my forearms and my hands and forearms and elbows are sore. I was like,
yeah,
man, I should probably dial back every once in a while.
Yeah. You can really get into it. But I'm the same way. Sometimes, you know, I'll do one and then be like, fuck it, do another video. Sometimes I'll go for a third.
Yep.
But yeah, I really like the variation. Like sometimes I will take all the targets on the move and just, you know, be honest with where the dot was at, move on certain targets, slam reloads in there. So huge fan of it. And that's really cool that you, that they're advertising your brand as well. Has anybody ever like come up to you and be like, hey, like I saw your logo on Dry Fire King and that's what led me to you?
On Instagram.
Okay.
A couple of times it's come up, in person. No, just you, believe it or not.
Okay. Yeah.
So far.
Well, it's working. But, you know, we've talked about your classes, we've talked about training and working matches. But if somebody wants to take a class from Synergy, what's the best way to sign up?
Man, synergyshooting.com, synergyshooting.com. I know my name is Synergy Training Group, but apparently that's a pretty common name. So that domain was not a thing. So synergyshooting.com, class schedules and all that are on there. If you want to host, I'm down to travel, love to travel, would love to come out to your range. Of course, the host gets a free seat. So if you have an opportunity to host, would love to have you. I have a couple of collaborations. So if you want more information on all that good stuff, Stony Steele, who's a grandmaster, teaches with me when he gets a chance. He works offshore, so he's only in half the time of the year. But if he's in and it works out for us, you actually get me and a grandmaster USPSA shooter as instructors. For the whole weekend. Works out really good. I got a cool rifle pistol collab 2-day deal with Eric Wise over in Texas. It's going to be a pretty freaking awesome class. It's coming up at the end of the month. But yeah, just go to the synergyshooting.com website. All the information is there on how to contact me, more info, that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. If you want to check out Tyler's class offerings, please go to his website. We're also going to link his social media profile in our post announcement. For our listeners, let us know how we're doing, and we'll see you on the next one.